up all the teachers. Time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. Cause they're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can.
Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Avington Miller, Jr.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the War Report. As our promo stated, I decided that, I think I even announced it last week, that we would do a part two of Real School Choice. That was the title of the show last week. And I would go into this week the positive youth development that I spent some time on last week. And that decision was really made on the basis of the way I see positive youth development and the role that such a framework could have in its impact on public education is enormous. Now, what did I just say? The way I see it, that's enormous. So much so that I guess I'm arguing that that question that posed a week or two ago about, actually, it was in November when I talked about various, I'm going to call them efforts, that have been put in play to, quote, hopefully save public education from extinction, and such as the possible freedom school, then the community schools, in the various variations of the community school, and particularly educating the whole child, that I saw these efforts as being attempts to stave off the total takeover, the annihilation of public education, and the rise of the privatization of public education. And so I didn't mention then positive development, maybe because I didn't think about it. I'd forgotten all about it. And so in preparing some work that I'm currently involved in now, the positive youth development concept popped in my head, and it was kind of like a light bulb moment, but more like it's positive youth development, stupid. That's what is missing from the conceptualization that I'm seeking to develop now as relates to an effort to save public education. And when it happened, it was like, why didn't I think about this earlier? But once I did, it became the sort of hub or maybe even glue that would bring all the other concepts that I've been working on together. It would hold them together. It would be the concept, master concept, I'm going to call it the master concept, that links or align all the other concepts that I'm working on into a cohesive, coherent picture. Okay, so let me try and clear what I just said up a little more here, because I don't want to sound like I'm rambling. What I'm talking about is that when last week we were talking about vision and mission and how the neoliberals had a vision and a mission, and how public education prior to the coming of the neoliberal onslaught, there was a vision and a mission, goals and strategies that were there. And then I talked about choice and what the neoliberal school representing one kind of choice, what that vision and mission looks like. And then I talked about positive development as a potential alternative to that, and I subtly gave a miniature comparison of those two. Well, I want to go deeper, a lot deeper, into the positive youth development as it relates to public education, as it relates to the possibilities, potential of the adoption of, on a massive basis, of the public, of the positive youth development model to possibly have and helping save public education. That's a big statement, but basically that's exactly where I'm coming from, and that's where I'm going to take us. And I've also decided that I don't want to rush this. This is very important. We've been on the air for 4 years, almost a month from now. And everything that we've done here basically has been aimed at saving public education. What role that the positive youth development can play in this, as I said earlier, could be enormous. And I want to give it its due in terms of not rushing it, not condensing it into a 40-minute soundbite. So I'm going to work on it today. When we start next Sunday with Black History Month and the last four shows of the War Report, I'm going to devote some time, probably towards the end of our hour, back to this positive youth development and its potential place in saving public education. And see, I'm saying it as if that's a positive, that's a given, that it can. So that's sort of like an indication, like where I'm coming from with this. And also, before I get into today, last week when I announced that War Report would go dark at the end of February, I was surprised that a number of people reached out to us here expressing sadness and disappointment and not wanting to see the War Report go off. I was taken away, blown away by the show, of the importance of the show to some people who have been here for a couple of years, at least, if not three or more. And so those of you who did reach out to us, it was heartfelt. Thank you. I really, really appreciated it. Those of you who reached out to tell us that War Report means something to you, War Report matters to you, and that it has been something that you look forward to hearing every week. You rely on points, viewpoints that, and information that we've tried to dispense here each week. And I could go with the tears in my eyes right now sort of thing. But anyway, I definitely wanted to get that out before we get into today's subject matter. Our promotion, we said that I was going to lay out my vision for the mission and the goals that Positive Youth Development Schools, if we had a school or schools, I'm going to lay that out for you. And I'm going to try and tell you what a school would look like from the ground up. I'm also going to try and talk about or explore and explain such things as what teacher training requirements would be in a positive youth development school. That in itself is very critical, and I will touch on it in a little more depth, but as I see what a positive youth development school, if you were to build it from ground up, or if you were to undergo a transformational experience, teachers, as usual, play a crucial role in what takes place in the school. The relationship teachers can make or build with students has a tremendous influence. The curriculum, the pedagogy, what the teacher brings from, and I said her, because 80% of the teachers are female, brings to the school, the classroom, can be, in many cases, some most important experiences that students have when they're in school, be it short-term or long-term. So I want to definitely get into what I mean by saying teacher training requirements that would be necessary for teachers to function in and at a high level in a PYD school. Okay. Also, I'm going to talk about inquiry and problem-based learning. I mentioned a little bit last week that project-based learning is sweeping classrooms across the country. There's a distinction between project-based learning and problem-based learning. The PYD school will embrace problem-based learning. So I want to explain that. Also, social or service learning. We all know about community service. When you're in college, maybe you could get involved in community service projects, get credit towards meeting the graduation requirement. Service learning is different from community service. Service learning is an evolution from community service. And it, to make itself legitimate, added an academic component to the service so that one is combining academic learning with experience out in this community or the social agency that you're working with, so that there is a one-to-one correspondent relationship between what you're learning in your classroom and then what you are doing and learning in your service setting. I'll talk a little bit more about that. Okay. Social justice education, civic education and engagement. These are very crucial to my vision of what a PYD school is all about. There are other concepts that should be added to that list. It's almost close to like 10 major concepts. And that's why I'm going to take my time and deal with two or three each of the remaining shows. All right. And then everything that I'll be talking about comes from a critical framework. I don't know if you are familiar with the notion of critical studies, critical literacy, critical research, critical theory, and it's from the French word critique. When you use a critical framework, you're basically looking at an issue or a problem, but you're looking at it critically in terms of what's right with it, what's wrong with it, what the negative impact is, what is the source of it being a critical issue. You're basically looking at a situation in terms of power relationships. We talked here over the years about Pablo Fiore, and he was a very strong proponent of critical pedagogy. You may already know that word and or that idea of critical pedagogy, but now it has been taken to higher and broader atmosphere, and since that you now look at everything through critical lenses. And that's almost a critical using it, you know, in a double fashion, but that's extremely important to the PYD school. The critical perspective. And I'll go over that more and more for you. And then there I put in the statement that fidelity to critical inquiry, truth, and social justice. That pretty much is the theme of my vision of the Positive Youth Development School. That said school, like universities, you know, that's where I come from. So I'm bringing this to the public school, starting at the high school level, that Positive Youth Development School should have as its motto, its essence, what I think I have brought to my studies and my experience at the university, bringing it down to the public school, this notion of fidelity to critical inquiry, fidelity to truth, and fidelity to social justice. This, for me, is the essence of what a Positive Youth Development School will be about. Because it's the essence for me of all of my years in teaching research, my fidelity to inquiry. We didn't call it inquiry per se, but it was research. And we're looking for the truth. So hence, combine the notion of the inquiry, the critical inquiry, we're looking for the critical truth. And in my particular case, from day one, I have been committed to what we now call social justice. Those three, individually and collectively, make up what I consider to be the foundation upon which a positive youth development school would be built. So, let me sort of like get you into the vision of what a positive youth development school would look like, feel like, and sound like. Okay. I've sort of given you a hint already, but take what I said. Well, let me go back and do it from a different way. Last week, I was asked or invited to come to a school, a public school, here in Buffalo, and talk to a group of students. And it was not a traditional school, and I don't want to identify the school, but there were at-risk students of various ages. And I started off talking to them. My first thing I said to them, it was about 70 of them, male and female, that I wished I had an opportunity to talk to each one of them individually around a question of, how did you get here? Once you got here, why have you stayed? What has happened in the development of your life that led you inevitably to here, this time, this place? And the kids were looking at me like, whoa. I figured there were 70 different stories that could be told. And then the question of, if you, given whatever route you got here, why did you, if you made the decision on your own to come back to school, what happened to you when you were out of school that made you decide that you needed to come back to school? I sort of asked myself the same question. How did I get to deciding to put an end to the war report at 4 years? And why? And here's what happened. One time, I've been thinking about this for a while. You know, I took every year, we go through the evaluation of should we start a new year or not and whatever. And I've gone through that the three previous years, and each time it was, your work isn't done yet, keep going. Well, starting last spring, when I was asked to come into the Justice Department here at the U.S. Attorney General's office and help them with a program that they were getting engaged in, and they saw education playing a potentially huge role in the success of this program, and they asked me to come in as a partner developing their approach to the program, as well as being a head consultant to them. And it was me saying to myself, what, first of all, I was the last person on earth they should ask this, because I'm not a fan of Sessions, the U.S. Attorney General. I'm not a fan of the Obama administration. I'm definitely not a fan of the present administration and the Clinton administration that started the private prison industry. And people should know that, but I was so surprised that they still wanted me to come in. All right, I made the decision to come in. And I said, what can I bring to this? And what it was, of course, for me was school to prison pipeline. So I laid out what the school to prison pipeline was all about. And they were like, whoa. And then I wrote them a little, almost like a small, short message. It was a formula. And the formula was something like this. And I told you part of the formula, but I deliberately didn't tell you the back end of it. It was school to prison pipeline, prison to school pipeline, decrease one, increase one, equals a win-win for everyone. What I was saying was decrease the school to prison pipeline link, increase the prison to school link, and if you could do that, this would be a win-win. It would be a win on the reducing, hopefully dismantling the school to prison pipeline, and it would be a win on those individuals, and particularly youth who were in juvenile detention centers or adults in adult prison. If we could use that incarceration as a pipeline to funnel them back into education, not just, you know, getting a GED, but actually, if they were in prison for a long length of time, actually getting them to the point where they could get a diploma, possibly start taking college credit courses, and possibly graduating, so that when they got out of prison, they would have knowledge and skills that would hopefully help them from returning to prison. And this is what the feds were interested in. They call recidivism. The recidivism rate in the first 3 years is well over 70-some percent. Also, what they were interested in is the fact that federal prison, it costs anywhere from $72,000 to $75,000 or $76,000 a year per inmate. So that's what they were really interested in, is how do we keep these people from recidivating and coming back to prison? And education was looked at as a possible solution to the three components of their new program. First component was prevention. So we get into schools, and we try and help the school develop programs, or we develop programs, bring them in, that help kids, prevent kids from getting involved in the juvenile and or adult justice system. Two, if they were already involved, then it's called intervention. We would intervene with programs that would keep them from going further into the criminal justice system. And then the last part was if they were in and they were getting out, then programs that would help them from going back, recidivating. That was my contribution. And when I started working with him and started sharing my ideas and et cetera, it hit me, I can almost tell you the exact date, it hit me last, I started with him end of March, April, it started, and then by May, it hit me that this is what you really should be working on. Should be working on programs, ideas, etc., aimed specifically at the youth, and particularly the, quote, at-risk youth. And I had presented another sort of like formula that goes something like this. I wanted to, kids who are, quote, at risk for school failure, at risk of dropping out, at risk of being pushed out, kids who are at risk for drugs, young girls getting pregnant before they finish school, at risk for becoming homeless, and on and on and on. My formula says this: we will meet and greet each student where he or she is, and then seek to transform them from being at risk for all those things that I just said to becoming at risk for becoming the next generation of doctors, scientists, teachers, social workers, and almost like, heaven forbid, politicians, but politician with a progressive mentality and all kinds of social, humanistic roles that these kids could play if we were able to help them transition or transform from one category of at risk to another. And underlying all that was my statement, which I gave several talks about this, that, and even here on the show, that all of us, each and every one of us, are at risk at some time for something in our lifetime. The only question is for what are we will or will be at risk for and why? And so the wheels begin to start turning for me in terms of this is what you need to start concentrating on. And two other things, which are very appropriate for next week's and the last 4 weeks of February, the Black History Month, was the argument between W.E.B. Du Bois and Booker T. Washington. Washington was an accommodationist to slavery and to Black being placed after slavery into another category of inferiority. And he started a school that basically was going to teach the emancipated slave how to be valuable to the dominant culture as an emancipated slave, how to dress, how to act, how to behave, how to be of service, to work in the home, work in the shops and whatever, how to be of service and to have the mentality and behavior set that made them as acceptable as, quote, a free person as they were as a slave. And I use the word acceptable very tongue-in-cheek here. WWE Du Bois and a lot of other people did not support Washington's ideas and his approach. Du Bois took an idea called the talented chance. And he said that education should not be like Washington was promulgating it. It's instead what education should be would for the newly emancipated slaves to get a quality education so that they could go back to their community and work to what everyone called in to uplift its people. Come back to your community as the doctors, the lawyers, the social worker, the teacher, what have you, and then help uplift your community. And I looked at that and I said, this is exactly what I'm talking about here when I said, we'll, as teachers, we will meet and greet you where you are, meaning if you are 15 and you're reading on a third grade level, if you've been suspended, if you've been expelled, what have you, we will accept you, we will greet you, we will accept you, and then we will work on your behalf to help you move from at risk for the negative to being at risk for the positive. So that was taking like WD voice and expanding it and applying into today's kind of situation. Once I got there, it was almost a foregone conclusion that I would have to put the war report to bed because this new direction that I'm going, I can't say I'm starting from scratch, but it's taking everything that I have to channel my energies, whatever little resources I have, into building this model. Building this model that will, if it's ever put into play, could, I truly believe, and when I lay out the full model to you, hopefully you will see it, truly believe that if districts embrace this model, it could help stave off, at least for a while, if not completely, the total decimation of public education. Now, that's a big statement. But that's hubris taken to almost a new level. But what I'm saying here is that the model would, if totally embraced and developed to its capacity, I'm deliberately not, you know, laying out the model completely right now, would put a dent in, say, the dropout rate. That's one of the things that we are being blamed for, is our students are dropping out in record numbers now, and that's the school's fault, you know, what have you. It would put a dent in the, and I hate this word, the achievement indicators, you know, the high-stakes testing, and the, like here in New York, the exit exams. If you could do that, you deprive the other side of two of their major weapons for being able to take over schools, turn schools over to management companies, create situations where entities could come in and take over the school, take it out of the hands of the public, and putting it in the pipeline for privatization. Just those two alone. If you could, retention is called, you know this, retention. But retention with the kids making progress towards, quote, demonstrating that they can pass dumbass standardized tests. I believe we can do that with this model. And some of the other negatives that, then what would this do? It would, the teachers wouldn't be taken totally off the hook, because the main goal of the other side, as you already know, is to get rid of the teachers and turn to Teach for America, Relay, and EdTech. Or in Wisconsin and other places where if you have a job and you use math in your job, you can come in and teach math as long as you're not a pedophile and we can find out about it. You know those places where they're saying that basically anyone can teach. You don't need college training and education to be a teacher. If you have life experience, career experience that allows you to be, quote, have knowledge in the area of history, engineering, math, or even now technology, you can come in, you can teach. I think that would put a real big dent in that, because, again, if we retain the kids and if we keep the kids on track to be able to graduate and the school's, quote, taken off the endangered species list, you got to give teachers credit. You gave them credit when you put them on the list. You now have to give teachers credit that an administration that is doing something, quote, right. I hate that too, but you know what I'm saying. So that they may use other, and they've got a lot of arrows in their quiver to pull from, but those are probably the two biggest ones. Then austerity, the use of cutting budgets and doing everything they can to starve the school of the needed resources to further make it possible for schools not to do, quote, what they want schools to do. I can go on and on in terms of what I think the impact of this model would be, both in terms of thwarting the neoliberal war on public education, and I can certainly list out, and I will as we go along, what I think the benefits are. But I'll be doing this in the context of the limelight will be on the kids. High school, middle school, elementary school. We started a war report, and our highlight was on the teacher profession, and what I thought teachers could do if organized, if committed to building a resistance. Did forget about the kids, but that was my focus. And the reason for that focus was that teachers, they still had jobs, those who still had jobs. The retirees, they still had income coming in. These were the people who were on the front line, who are on the front lines now, not was, but on the front line. They were seeing it firsthand. They had both the knowledge and the resources to mount the most effective, in my opinion, resistance movement that could be mounted. You know, I've given the formula 100 times in terms of one teacher, have a spouse or a significant other, parent or two, brother, sister, uncle, aunt, cousin, friend. If each teacher got 10 supporters, I think back in 2014, we had something like maybe approaching 5 million teachers. Those were the ones who, quote, union affiliated, what have you. There were more, there were not. But 5 million would turn to 50 million. And we're like, you know, whoa. But then if you had students over the years and you were able to bring students in, that number easily could go up to 75, 80, even 100 million, which is a third of the country. That's why I decided that the War Report would seek to try and create awareness, understanding, emotional engagement, and then positive individual or collective social action among the teacher's rank. And that if it had any success, we could halt the neoliberal war in its tracks and put it on the defensive. That was my hope. It hasn't worked out that way, but that's where I had taken us over almost these 4 years. Now, I'm looking at the youth, the ones who are in high school, who a year from now will be able to vote, 2 years from now, and off-year election, they'll be able to vote for state as well as national election. 4 years from now, hopefully someone will be able to vote for many will be able to vote for the president and what have you. That this group, which totals over 50 million to start with, if they got engaged, we would have an even better chance of being able to save public education. So, starting last spring, as I start embracing my shortcomings as related to the inability to mobilize the teachers and the parents, looking at the youth as maybe the last hope, and that in order to put the youth in a position to be able to survive, to thrive and flourish in this society, and also be able to individually and collectively get involved in the important problems affecting them, their families, their communities, and their future, I needed to make a pivot. So I started looking at what, and you guys are going to laugh, what I call the war on children in America. Very broad, looking at the war as it's played out through education, as it's played out through consumerism, as it's played out through juvenile justice, as it's played out in popular culture, as it's played out in historical context, global context, and I needed to be able to dive into this all guns blazing, I hate to use that phrase, but that's what comes to mind, and be able to spend whatever time, I'm 74 years old, so whatever time and whatever resources I have, trying to help the youth be in a position to both survive, thrive, flourish as young adults, either going to college, whatever career they're going to go to, but as importantly, in my view, even more importantly, for them to be knowledgeable, democratic citizens engaged fully in the democratic process of trying to help make the world, this country, a better place, which you know is my lifelong theme, a better world. And so that answers that question of how I got here to this point of closing down the War Report and then opening up the effort to help the youth in their development so that when they reach 18, 19, 20, 20, up to 24, hopefully they will have the knowledge, the skill, the experience that's needed to survive in the changing landscape of the U.S. and the globe. If I can have any impact, then, as one of my lines in favorite song, The Impossible Dream, that when I lay to my rest, all covered in, you know, man covered in scorn, would lay to his rest, that if I've done something to help bring about this better world, then my heart I would lay peaceful and still, knowing that I've helped some. I know that's probably all kinds of crap that you didn't want or need to hear. But I think it's very important in going forward over the next now 4 weeks, and that if and when we, not if, but when we do say goodbye, that you know that we are, because Joe and Deb understand what I'm doing and they're still my knight, that we have not abandoned the war, but what we've done is prepare to go to another theater of war that's much bigger and hopefully be able to do something. Because in the end, you know, it's all about the kids. And that's where we're coming from. Now, I totally did not tell you the vision. I totally did not tell you the mission and all the things that I was going to tell you. And that's because up until airtime, I was still wrestling with the idea of, for those people who expressed sadness and wanted to see the war report to go on, that I needed to talk to them. I don't know how many of you are in that category, but I needed to talk to you to let you know we're not going away. We're going to another place, hopefully a bigger, larger place, and hopefully be more effective than we have been by going to this new place and in the way in which we're going, so that if you're a teacher, you're a parent, you will appreciate a year from now, 2 years from now, 5 years from now, if I'm still around, that we made the decision and made the move. And so that is what I felt I needed to spend some time talking to those who have been with us week after week and over the years. Well, We've dubbed here, we got a special a segment of the population that's a loyal fan of the War Report. This show basically turned out to be for you. Next week, we'll get into parts of Black History Month program, and then I will go more into this Positive Youth Development School. And I want to leave you at the end of February, hopefully, saying, yes, that's what we need as relates to the Positive Youth Development Schools. I want to be a part of that as a parent or as a teacher, as a grandparent. And damn it, this is something that I will put myself on the line for, because this is for the kids for now and for going forward. Thank you, everyone. Time is up. Have a good rest of your Sunday, and we'll see you next week as we start really into our countdown to saying goodbye. Have a good one, everyone.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.
Good God, y'all.
What is it good for?
Absolutely.
Let's get
saying again.
War.
Lord.
What is it good for?
Absolutely.
Nothing.
Listen to me.
War.
It ain't nothing but a heartbreak.
War.
Send only to the undertaker.